This podcast contains language that is not appropriate for children, but if your child is smart enough to avoid falling into a gorilla enclosure, then they can probably listen to our podcast.
This episode was brought to you by The Food Babe. The Food Babe, for when you don't understand basic chemistry, but still want to get your fear-mongering on.
So you've been anywhere around social media the past few days? Of course, you heard about Harambe, the gorilla that was shot dead at the Cincinnati Zoo this past Saturday after a four-year-old fell into his enclosure. Obviously, a very tragic incident all around, but a necessary result from that because a tranquilizer does not have the same immediate effect that a firearm would and could actually make him become more aggressive towards the child. So I have a problem, though, with the knee-jerk reaction and the blaming of the parents and even going as far as to creating a petition to have them investigated by CPS. Kids must have some sort of special class in preschool where they learn the fine art of running away from parents. And this can something that can happen in a moment when a parent has their attention drawn away to something else. And in this specific example, there are reports that the parent was tending to other children that she had at the time. I get the fact that people are angry, but making decisions and calling for change when you're angry is often not the best idea. It's pretty easy to overreact when you're pissed off and ignore rationality. People are angry at the situation and don't know who to blame. I get it. Harambe was a silverback gorilla, which is an endangered species, but it's not a black and white issue. There's some shared blame to be had here. Sure, the parent could absolutely have prevented the incident by being a super mom, but every parent has a moment when they're not focused 100% on their child 100% of the time. Anyone that tells you that they are is just a fucking lying liar. Incidents like Harambe being shot spark faux outrage from people who are seeking to feel better about themselves by putting others down. The zoo also could have prevented it by having more secured enclosure for Harambe. It's a really shitty situation with no one person to blame. And I get it. They haven't had an issue with anybody breaching the enclosure in 30 years, but obviously they did. So that just means they got lucky for the past 30 years. This was not a situation where there's just one catastrophic breakdown by one individual person. Multiple failures occurred here. This could have happened to just about any parent. So instead of immediately reacting with some sort of online petition, which is pretty meaningless anyway, particularly since the change.org petition that's going around is being sent to the zoo itself rather than Ohio CPS, which kind of further illustrates the lack of rational thought involved. But instead, take a moment to look at the information we have and don't draw conclusions about the quality of parenting.
Hello and welcome to the Science Enthusiast Podcast. My name is Dan, and I'm joined by one of my co-hosts, Natalie.
Hey, Dan.
How you doing?
I'm okay. I'm here. How are you?
I am in this is the epitome of existing right now, what yeah. I have going on over
yeah,
here.
Right.
Also, we are rejoined tonight, I should say, by our other co-host, Devin.
Yes, it is good to be back with you guys.
We missed
Fucker.
You.
I mean, yeah, I miss you too.
Yeah, see,
man, I can see the divide in loyalty here.
I'm the nice one. See, I'm one of your other drunk nobodies, so we stick together.
Oh, we're all various stages of drunk nobodies. What are you drinking tonight, Natalie?
I am drinking Boulay bourbon. So if they want to send some my way to sponsor the show, I'd be totally cool with that. So.
And what about you, Devin?
I have Ninkasi Brewing's Pale Ale.
I'm drinking brand of vodka that makes a loopy flavor. It tastes like Fruit Loops, but they can't put Fruit Loops because then hashtag copyright infringement.
You know what? That sounds super classy, so I'm glad that we know that about you.
I don't think any part of it is... I'm drinking Fruit Loops.
You're drinking Fruit Loops.
Flavored as vodka, so I don't think any part of that's classy. If anything, it speaks more to the quality of my character, but...
Yeah, and that's okay. We accept you for who you are, so...
I was made in his image, which yeah. Hashtag great segue that leads us into our first segment tonight.
To the God of the week, because you know what? We're willing to believe in anything for 7 days.
There we go.
So this week's God of the week is the Titaness Themis of Greek mythology. Or not mythology. She totally exists.
Totally. Because no, and we are praying to her right now.
Well, we're dedicating this entire whatever this is.
This is a podcast episode.
So Themis is the Titaness of divine ordered law, natural law, and custom. And so we have her to thank for all sorts of things, common affairs of humans, particularly assemblies, exciting things such as that.
when I think
her,
of exciting,
her name be praised.
Yeah. Assemblies, obviously.
Yeah, right. Dude, it was better than going to class.
I guess. It's like when they wheel in the video or VCR and TV, and it's like it's an assembly.
Teacher hangover day. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's not. What's funny is that's not too far from the truth in my. Not that I ever did that, but I had coworkers that I knew for a fact would do that on those days.
The ones that would drink the Fruit Loop vodka the night before.
Former, yeah, right.
Those people, those assholes. So
we all tip our drinks this evening to Themis.
Yeah, Themis and assemblies, and why not?
Whatever.
Two assemblies.
Like, two assemblies for the next 7 days. Jesus, we have to worship assemblies.
No, not Jesus. Not Jesus.
Sorry, Themis. I'm sorry. Jesus is my number one go-to God reference. But
well, he's my co-pilot, but he's not my number one.
No?
She's a titaness.
Okay, sorry, so...
That's it. You're definitely going to Themis.
I'm already going to all kinds of hell.
I'm okay with that.
Okay.
So speaking of going to hell, we have a special guest this week.
Yes, we do.
Whatever that means.
So, that was super nice. Yeah.
That was good.
I'm working, guys, this is only our third episode. We're working segues? On our segues here.
Yeah. Take what you can get.
So, Lauren, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Okay, so I am a PhD candidate. I'm studying molecular immunology. I specialize in tumor immunology / cancer immunotherapy. Specifically, I study the response of a specific kind of immune cell called the T cell to radiation therapy. So localized cancer treatment. Shoot a beam of x-rays at a tissue, and the tissue like explodes, and then your immune system cleans it up.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I love what I do. Like, I love thinking about the different players in the microenvironment. I think it's super cool.
And I don't remember like everything that he did, but I remember this freshman year of high school, my biology teacher, when we got to immunology. Like he broke everything. Like he did such a great job. And I'm the asshole that can't remember it. But he like assigned like he had like killer T cells or like General Patton and had like all these other different like characters like that broke down. And it was just about like the coolest thing. It's the only thing I remember from that class. But yeah, I totally agree with that. There's like your immune system is just it's pretty great. I don't know if you've ever used it, but it's just pretty.
Hopefully we've all used it. Yeah,
it's pretty intricate. Yeah, it's probably like one of the fields in my program where you have to memorize the most, just because there are so many different things to study. So like a lot of the other PhD programs are more of a technical skill. So like one of my roommates will spend like 8 or 12 hours on the electron microscope straight, just like moving something around in liquid nitrogen cooled chamber. And that's super cool to him, but I would never want to do that. I have to like, I kind of make up stories where the cells are players and we're trying to kind of turn the tides of war. And I don't know. It's a cool story.
I like that story.
Yeah.
Use like D&D dice to like figure out what happens or,
sometimes it feels like it's so intricate and so complicated and everyone's different. Every animal model is different. Every cell line is different. Every tumor type is different. It feels random sometimes and it can be frustrating. And there's a lot of pressure sometimes,
That kind of leads into, I guess, a question or more of a thing that a lot of people, some people say, or a lot of, especially a lot of like pro pseudoscience websites, what they say So like when they say, you know, we don't have a cure for cancer, or they know, like scientists know the cure for cancer, but Big Pharma is suppressing that because, you know, money or whatever. I mean, like what are your thoughts on that? To just to that thought process that, you know, A, we do know what the cure for cancer is, or B, even that there is just one possible cure for cancer.
It goes against the nature of the disease. So thinking that there's one cure of cancer or that we would be suppressing it. That there are a lot of things about that that just don't make sense. But specifically, cancer is so varied. It's a more of a family of diseases than a specific disease. It's just like how...
Kind of not unlike the... The autism diagnosis, it's not just one thing. Like people think it's just one specific diagnosis, but it's an entire spectrum. Is that incorrect?
I don't study autism.
Well, I meant like, it's a whole spectrum. Like it's not just one specific.
It's not a spectrum. Exactly. No. It's like, okay, so like your skin looks completely different from your bone, looks completely different from your muscle to your lung, to your heart, to your brain, right? So all of those tissues look completely different. So why would you expect a disease that is derived from your skin or your brain or your lung? Why would that look the same between the two areas, right? So like they're completely different families of diseases. They have different starting points and they have different pathways to mutations. So like, a testicular cancer that grows in your scrotum, that's an immune privileged site. So like your immune system is less active there. So that the challenges for growing testicular cancer are different from growing lung cancer, where you have a pretty constant circulating immune system, especially because it's in contact with the outside environment, right? So those are entirely different environments. The disease develops entirely differently. So it's not, people say all the time that it's not one disease, it's hundreds of diseases. And that's true, but it's even more than that, because a pancreatic tumor between patients is going to look entirely different just because of your genetic makeup and your environment.
All right, I'm going to pose a question, if I may.
Okay.
I was wondering if you could just kind of give us a general idea, because I think I might speak for some people who don't really understand very much of this particular area. What actually is immunology? I know that's one of your focuses.
Immunology is just the study of your immune system. So just neurology is the study of the brain and neurons. Immunology is the study of your immune system.
And so how are you applying that to the research of cancer?
Your immune system is involved in cancer development kind of from start to finish. So the first stage of kind of your body stopping you from getting cancer is each of your cells has a certain number of checkpoints that it has to check with itself whenever it divides. So cancer is primarily a disease of hyperproliferation of a cell. So your cell first checks to make sure that your DNA is all good to go before you replicate your cells and it is allowed to grow. As you accumulate mutations, that gets kind of messed up. And then your immune system gets involved. So when those cells start looking different, your immune system can sense that and it can get rid of those weird cells. And then your other ones can take its
place. So would an accurate comparison then be like if you make like a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy on a photocopier, it just looks like shittier and shittier. Exactly. And then eventually your immune system's like, no, fuck this. Like,
yeah,
you need to die.
Yeah, you could say that. Often that your cells can actually like repair it. So it'd be like, if you could zoom enhance sort of thing. But eventually... Eventually your enhancing crops out, right? Mm-hmm. Which is why older people tend to get cancer more. They've just had more time for their cells to replicate and incorporate mutations. So when your cells start looking kind of fucked up, your immune system comes in. And your immune system has different ways of sensing when your cells look weird. But it's constantly clearing out cells. So like whenever you get a sunburn, your skin is super red and it starts flaking. The flaking is because your skin cells have realized, oh fuck, we're dead, or the DNA is damaged to shit. So they all kill themselves. They flake off, and then it's red because your immune system is activated. It's clearing up a lot of that, those dead cells. It's clearing,
right. And I've heard it, maybe you could either confirm or dismiss this, that when you do have a sunburn, if it doesn't, it's actually more dangerous, or however you want to phrase it. If it doesn't actually flake off like that, if it just gets really red and then doesn't flake off, and because your skin's not shedding all those.
Yeah. There are different. Yeah. But like, it's good that your body is shedding. Like, it's painful, but it's important. It's important that your skin sheds off. Like, that's a necessary. It's kind of like vomiting when you have food poisoning. Like, you need to get rid of that bacteria, which is why you vomit. So that's kind of what your skin does. So actually, Dr. Bob Schreiber published this paper in 2004. I'll give it to you for the show notes, but he kind of proposed these. Three E's of cancer immunoediting. So immunoediting is your immune system going around your body and like getting rid of cancer, like potentially cancerous cells. So first E says that there's elimination, where your immune system will go through and eliminate any diseased cells. And then there's equilibrium, where you've kind of reached this balance with your immune system and the cancer. So if a cancer cell gets across, like if it evades your immune system, but it can't grow more, like if that's in check, that would be equilibrium. And then there's
this what's inhibiting that growth?
The growth could be a lot of different things. So like sometimes hyperproliferation is a trigger, or like maybe in order to keep growing. So a big part of cancer is searching for a blood supply. So if it can't grow out of that, if it keeps growing, it won't have oxygen supply. It can be like necrotic in the center, like dead in the center.
Yeah.
So there are different kind of ways that cancer is halted growing naturally in your body. And then it's just an accumulation of mutations that pushes it past.
How often, normal is, like in a normal healthy person, like how often do things like that happen, or do you even know like how often that happens to just the average person? And then like, so you have what would be like a cancerous growth that your immune system just is able to shut down on its own without you even knowing.
So actually in men, by the time you're in your mid-20s, you are really likely to have cancerous prostate cells. So you probably have prostate cancer right now, but it's such a slow growing tumor that you'll probably die of something else first. Like it happens all the time.
At least there's that.
Wow. At least there's that. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So like you might have a few cancerous cells, but they're not going to divide enough to get in the way. But like,
I could like fucking talk about this all night. Anyway, I'm sorry. I should have interrupted because I was going to add like, the prostate cells or whatever, do they just grow slowly or so, like what?
Yeah. So, just different tissue types divide at different rates. So like your skin replicates a lot because it's constantly getting pushed outward, shed off, getting repaired. That divides really quickly, which is why skin cancer is so common. Like you have so much surface area and it's constantly growing. There are a lot of chances for mutations to get incorporated and turn into, for your skin to turn into a tumor. So something like the prostate, it replicates really slowly. Like your prostate doesn't need to constantly grow and shed, right? It's mostly a hormone secreting organ, or semen. semen, the stuff that sperms come in, right? Like your prostate produces semen. You guys are giggling like children. I love it.
Okay, so I'm going to ask...
this is a super highbrow podcast.
We had a few questions that were posed from the Science Enthusiasts group on Facebook, and we'd like to ask you a couple of those as well. One of them that I think is fits really well into the vein of our podcast is, who is the most annoying cancer quack, in your opinion? People who are peddling nonsense related to cancer.
I don't know. All quacks seem to have a cancer specialty. Like everyone says everything causes and cures cancer. Like Mercola will peddle 1,000 things that cure cancer. And
isn't he the asshole that sold tanning beds that said, these prevent cancer or cure cancer or whatever?
It's like, let me give you cancer and then let me cure your cancer. Like, that's a great business model, right?
He's an asshole. Yeah. He's a total asshole,
he just had to settle. I think just a few million. Like he had to settle for making those claims, but like for some reason, it just blows me away. Like that's not like headline news, like everywhere, and nobody really pays attention to like shit like that.
He flies under the radar very well.
Oh, he's so good at that, and I don't understand how or why.
He is the modern snake oil salesman who gets away with like whatever he wants. But yes.
And I think I heard, I can't attribute this correctly to who threw this idea out there, but I think the reason is he's not trying to be everywhere and do everything like Food Babe is. Like she wanted to have her own like Dr. Phil type whatever it is, like afternoon show on TV like that. And that's why she's been such an easy target, because she's trying to be so big. And Mercola and his girlfriend aren't necessarily trying for that, even though they're making like $4 or $5 million a year off their website. But anyway, I digress.
Mercola spent my natural health resource since 1998.
Yeah, whatever the fuck that means.
That's the tagline on his website.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
It looks like it's from 1998, too.
Yeah.
yeah, but, like, Merkel is an asshole, right? Like, no one's denying that he's a dick, but is he any more of a dick than the truth about cancer people? Or Gerson, who developed Gerson therapy that tells cancer patients to shove coffee up their ass? Not necessarily. Food Babe says 1,000 things cause and cure cancer, and they're all irresponsible. But honestly, like, for me, someone like David Avocado Wolf that just has, like, not necessarily just, like, he's stupid, he's an asshole, but he's arrogant about it, and he's hurting other people. That infuriates me more. Like, that is harder for me to understand than someone who's just greedy. Like, greed is easier for me to understand than you just don't care about other people and think you're that great.
Well, and people really take the word of these, like, David Avocado Wolf people, like, through their memes or whatever they think is gonna, you know, cure cancer. Like,
yeah, and that's frustrating. Why? Like, it's really frustrating, and it makes my job harder to do.
Mm-hmm.
When people think that I'm trying to kill people. I mean, I do cancer research. I do basic research on your immune system, and I get the same stuff with vaccines. I try to explain vaccines to people, and they show me like PubMed abstracts that say the exact opposite of what they think they say. And they just have that bizarre arrogance where they think that they don't need training to understand these super complex topics and texts. Your immune system, your tissue, nothing's really intuitive or easy to understand until you look at it really closely.
Yeah. Well, and so, I mean, I see another question from the science enthusiast group is, what is the weirdest cancer, you know, in quotes, cure being peddled today? I mean, I'm sure that there's many, but like, are there any that stick out to you as just particularly crazy?
The butt stuff is weird.
Yeah.
The butt stuff is really weird. Like, I don't understand why everyone's obsessed with your butt. Like,
right.
Whenever I post about coffee enemas on Biology Babe, I get some guy who says, well, it's easier to absorb the caffeine that way. I'm like, but why?
It's like,
the option.
What does that do?
It's like that's not incorrect. You could also get super drunk super quick by putting alcohol in your ass, but it doesn't mean it's a good idea or that it's necessarily
that it's
safe.
Or something. Like,
I don't understand the butt stuff. The butt stuff's super weird. The detox thing is really strange.
Mm-hmm.
Detox thing is like, oh, and the alkaline diet. The alkaline stuff is just bizarre. Like,
that
people will have.
I can't stand that.
Not only the alkaline diet, but how they say lemons alkalize your body even though they're acidic. Like, there's no internal consistency.
It's like when you say it out loud, it just sounds so bizarre, yet people believe it.
Absolutely. And like, if you actually just sit and think about it, like, just think about that for a second. Like, if you what you ate changed your body's pH, then drinking orange juice would kill you. Your blood would turn to acid and you would just die. I don't know why people think that eating, I don't know, carbohydrates makes your body turn to lemon juice.
Yeah, when you say it like that, I don't know why either, but people, I mean, people will buy into that because
you'll
they will buy
into
You'll
have to get a psychologist on here.
Yeah.
I do cancer stuff. Someone else can do the brain picking stuff.
Yeah, I think we're going to need to do that. I have some people in mind, actually, so we're...
I think it's more of a, well, that sound like that makes... I mean, if I put X in my body, then I should have Y results from that. And I think it's just a lack of understanding of just even just like how your digestive system works or how...
I think it's about applying concepts because people don't think like, okay, well, if I believe that the alkaline diet is true, then what other things have I been eating? Like, what would that be doing to my body? Like, why would eating a salad be better for my blood than eating a steak? Like, that, why are those things different?
And you know how I resolve that? I eat a salad when I eat a steak.
Oh, that seems like a novel concept to have some kind of balanced-ish meal. Yeah.
Right, and not like a 20 ounce porterhouse or anything, like an actual like.
What are you thinking?
8 ounce filet.
And not even 8 ounce. I think it's only supposed to be 4 ounces. I think.
Oh yeah, size of a deck of cards.
The size of the palm of your hand.
Yep, that.
Mm-hmm. I have tiny hands though. That sucks.
You can borrow mine. I got huge hands. Giant steaks.
That goes with
it's
the
like
outtake.
Like a cubit, right? Like how Noah's Ark is 300 cubits long, and a cubit is the length between the inside of your elbow and I think the tip of your finger. But like
you have no idea. You have no idea like how excited. Anytime somebody says anything about the Ark, how excited? How excited I get because that place is like an hour and a half from my parents' house. And I'm totally
next Thanksgiving you're visiting.
Ooh, no, not even like July. I'm going.
Oh, is it open already?
It's opening July 7th, I think.
And he's obviously going on opening day.
I'm not going to opening day. No. I'm going to go like the week after, like in the middle of the week. So it's not going to be as busy. I'm going to take so many pictures. And I'm going to like live tweet the experience and oh my gosh, I'm going to do like a blog post about it and everything and just be like
all about the art. Yeah.
This is, I'm going to have to like, I need to do like, it's going to be, I think it's really one of those things where I can do like 80% of the work before I even go and then just plug in pictures and just like talk about it and then be like, 25% poverty rate around in the area, and then just drive around the area and take pictures of houses and be like,
How does Christianity explain different races?
They don't. They don't explain anything. Let's just be real here.
Well, it's a celebration. Like, it's a celebration of genocide and then incest.
Mm-hmm.
So
the incest and genocide that, park.
It is. I don't know like the moment, like whenever I decide that I'm done with my visit at the Ark Encounter, I don't know if they have the Creation Museum open at the park now or if the, because I know there's one like 40 minutes away from where they're building it. There's also, I think there's one in like Cincinnati or there's somewhere like fairly close to me that I'm planning on going to like sometime in the fall. But I mean, they can like the mental gymnastics that they go through to explain those things is just astounding. I'm sure that like their argument would be, well, you know, after the Ark, people were separated and lived on their own. And then just naturally, you know, we have people that, you know, have all sorts of different features and blah, 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 blah. But that's first they have to explain how a 500-year-old dude with Bronze Age tools was able to build an ark that had two of everything, and how penguins from South Africa were able to, or even Antarctica were able to walk their happy asses to the Middle East to jump on board the ark and then walked their happy asses back without, you know, dying. Or
the world was smaller then.
Honestly, like,
if it changed a lot of geography.
Well, I mean, it was only 6,000 years ago, so it was a similar time 6,000 years ago.
And if you want to believe in something, you will find a way to believe in that, and you will craft whatever miraculous story you need. And it's fucking crazy as shit, though. Like, this is a whole episode, but it is fucking crazy. Yeah. We always go to religion.
It's the same. Back to Alt Med, which is
back to something else that's equally
the same thing. Like, alternative medicine is the magical thinking of health, and it's as crazy as religion sometimes. So yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say I'm a militant atheist. Like, I'm an atheist, but I don't think that all people who practice religion are stupid.
Right.
I think it holds a lot of value for people's cultures. I think that it's a symbol of family. I think that it's important for a lot of people, but there are definitely concepts where when someone tells you something magical and you just believe it because it's something you've always heard without questioning it, that is, you can see that in a lot of different ways. You can see that in politics, you can see that in religion, you can see that in art, you can see that in any opinion, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I just prefer to deal in facts.
Yeah.
You're such a dick for wanting like facts and real logic. Stuff. Like, yeah. How dare you?
Can I can I ask another question from the?
Please,
if you have to.
Oh, I do. I have to. It's a positive requirement. Okay. Another question that was asked from the science enthusiast group. Was with American students getting an average of 15 minutes or so of science education per week. Do you have suggestions for things parents can do at home to supplement the sort of educational void created by this minimization of science time at school?
Let me jump in here. You cannot escape the void.
Oh, I see what you did there.
He's an asshole. That's, we know that. Yeah.
You're a tool.
anyway, sorry, Lori.
Okay. Yeah, so it's kind of the advice I give to parents for any problem or issue or having, like, just spend time with your kids.
No, you cannot expect me to, like, be a parent. Spend time with my kids and have an active role in my child's education. Like, who are you?
Well, it's not even that. It doesn't have to be an education. It just has to be, like, exploring the world. Because, like, everything's new to your kid. When your kid touches something, it's not because they want to fuck up your life or break something.
It's not.
They want to see how it works. Wait,
you don't have children, do you? So they want to fuck it all up. But anyway.
It feels like that, right? Like, it feels like that. But, like, they're not necessarily malicious when they do.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah.
And so, when you're parenting, it's hard. It's really hard. Like, whenever I don't have kids, but whenever I spend time with kids and they touch something, I just, like, want them to stop. I just want them to stop me.
Yes, welcome to my life. Yeah.
That's great.
I just want them to fucking stop sometimes. Guys, come on.
But it's
chill. Yeah.
But this is how we do biology. The way we learn about something is we break it.
Yeah.
And then we try to fix it. We try to replace it. We try to study why it's broken. So it's important for kids to touch things and manipulate them and explore them. And so it's your job to kind of facilitate that. Like, you have to figure out a way to put aside time to let them study the world, to let them ask questions, to encourage that. If you don't know the answer, look it up. There's a big, vast Google for that. If you don't know what it is, you could maybe just talk about, like, oh, well, how would we find out what that answer is with, I don't know, an experiment or changing something, or how would we fix it? there are a lot of options, and it's socialization.
Yeah.
You have to get people excited by talking about it and showing them and letting them do it.
No, I think that's all like perfect, because as a parent, yeah, I mean, you want them to ask questions, and the former teacher in me, like, that's what I wanted in my students, was them to ask questions and for them to know sometimes that I didn't actually know the answer either. So it was my job to show them how to find the answer. So
exactly.
That there isn't just one source of knowing everything. That's not how it works. Like, there are experts, there are things that are unknown too. So helping them get through that process.
Exactly. Yeah. And admitting the mistakes and fixing them and going back and reevaluating your position is mm-hmm. part of that too. You always have to be curious and revise your view of the world. That's what your child is doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just getting them excited about the idea of learning, that it's not exactly. It's a process, it's a journey, and it, you know, it's something that's to be enjoyed and embraced.
It's not about going to school and sitting at a desk way too early in the morning with people you don't like, being asked to do things you find boring. It's about right. learning about the world and touching it and experiencing it and wanting to figure out more or experience more.
Yeah. And as parents, it's like, we can't expect school to do all of that. We can't expect it to give them that thirst for knowledge and everything. And it's, we supplement it at home as parents, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because
when they see you excited, they'll get mm-hmm. excited too.
Yeah, I absolutely.
Well, Martin, I definitely appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to join us tonight.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Lauren. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
I had a great time. Thanks for having me.
It was good for us too. If you enjoyed our interview with Laura tonight, you can follow her on Facebook as Biology Babe, on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. That's like a lot of social media, as BioL Babe. And links to all those can be found in our show notes.
Okay, so this week we are going to tell you why we love the internet. And we love the internet because of, I have to take a breath before I say this, garlic bread memes on Facebook. Because that's a thing that we are all looking at right now on our own computers, hundreds of miles away from each other, and fucking laughing at, because garlic bread. Oh my god! I see the one that says when your mom does it. Garlic bread. I'm sorry.
When your mom says you don't have any more garlic bread, and I don't even know what this is from, but it says why though. I like the one below it, the I eat garlic bread starter pack, and it's like a dude that's like on like a higher level of conscious than anyone else.
Oh yeah,
and
I
it's
saw
like,
that. Yeah.
Transcending time and space.
Yeah.
I like the kids sitting in the toilet.
And he's going to flush himself.
Yeah, pulling the flush.
Right,
says,
yeah.
When your mom doesn't buy garlic bread.
It's so good. It's like, I mean, what did people do before the internet? Like, what did we do when we couldn't look at memes at like, I mean, last night I was looking at memes at 2 a.m. Like, I mean, I hate myself for admitting that, but that's my life, and I will, own up to it. I mean, do you guys...
I cannot imagine a better existence.
Right?
Right now at 10:30 p.m., just mm-hmm. scrolling through memes about garlic bread. And they have this weird rivalry with banana bread. Like, banana bread is the anti-garlic bread on this page, and they just hate on it so hard.
It's like the Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr. Like, they're going to get into a duel. Like, garlic bread and banana bread.
Well, they have...
And who's
yeah,
gonna
and they have
win?
A... They have a video here, and we're going to have to link it to us in the show notes, definitely, where they show banana bread, and they say it's got the X-Files music behind it, and it says things like bananas or banana bread is made out of bananas. Bananas are yellow. Do you know what else is yellow? Sand. Do you know where sand, where else has sand? Egypt. Do you know what's in Egypt? Pyramids. Did you know that banana bread is triangular? You know what else is triangular? Bananas. Bananas have three syllables. Three times two is six. 666 is the number of the devil.
And you know what
Illuminati confirms.
Yeah, because it Illuminati. Garlic bread.
Oh, I love it.
All of it. Yeah. So, I mean, we like dicking around on the internet. If you guys didn't know already.
So I don't know if you guys know this or not, but Garlic Bread Memes has a Twitter as well, which is at GB Memes.
And no!
They shared a tweet on their Facebook page. It says, the hardest part about eating banana bread is telling your parents you're a failure. I love the banana bread ones. They hate on it so bad.
I mean, I like banana bread, though. Am I a terrible person? I also like garlic bread, so
I do secretly banana bread.
So I don't know. Like, I'll own up to liking both.
Well,
why not?
Well,
both?
Because garlic bread won't betray you. Garlic bread won't cheat on you. Garlic bread won't fight with you. Garlic bread won't divorce you.
All right. Well, then
hashtag
I guess.
GB memes.
Wow.
or here we go the I like garlic bread starter pack, and it's just a picture of a brain,
because all you need is a brain to like garlic bread, right? That's it.
Oh, just a brain.
So we all like garlic bread, I guess, and I like garlic bread memes. It's shit. Well, Devin, too bad you weren't here for crap taxidermy last week, because that was something too.
Is there BDSM garlic bread, though?
I don't think so. So I think that crap taxidermy like wins by a nose.
But I think they do, because I'm looking at one right now where it has a woman laying on a bed with her underwear down at her knees, and there's a dude sitting there watching TV, and on TV there is, of course, garlic bread.
Because garlic bread over literally anything else in life, right, is what it's saying. Garlic bread wins all the time.
Apparently.
Yeah.
This one's got a kid going down a slide, and he's getting increasingly scared in each frame. He's flipping out in the last frame, and it shows the end of the slide into a big pool of banana bread.
Well, here, yeah, they have another one with a kid going down the slide. Same idea, and it says, "How tasting bread without garlic feels."
I mean, like, I would like some garlic bread right now. So this is effective, I guess.
Yeah, maybe it might just be big garlic bread.
It is. It's big garlic bread conspiracy. Illuminati confirmed.
I wouldn't even care.
Is there banana bread memes?
There is, but only like 130 people like it.
Oh, it's not. No. It looks like it's a lot of Spider-Man. No, they had the opportunity and they lost it. Maybe. Oh, you know what? You know what they did? Garlic bread memes made banana bread memes to make them look bad.
I don't even get this one. It's some dude like 1950s style with his jacket over his shoulder, and his head is just a giant piece of banana bread. And it says, they say you are what you eat, but I don't remember eating God's tears.
What? Well, so that's something.
Like, that one's at least not terrible, because it's fucked.
Because it's fucked.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us tonight for this week's episode. If you enjoyed listening, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating on iTunes. You can also follow Natalie on Facebook as Science Moms, myself, Dan, as a science enthusiast, and Devin as Skepticism by the Pint. Again, if you enjoyed our interview with Oren, you can follow her on Facebook as Biology Babe, or on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat as BioLBabe, because hashtag social media, and links to all those will be found in our show notes. So we definitely appreciate you guys taking the time to listen to us tonight, and we will see you again next week.
Bye, guys.
Thank you very much. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, Devin.
What?
There it is.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was a little delayed on my end.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Balls.
It's okay. It's not your fault. It's not. Hey, Devin.
It's not your fault, man. Man, Devin. Listen to me. Listen to me, man.
Devin, it's not your fault.
Hands on shoulders. Hands on
It's
shoulders.
Not your fault.
It's not your fault.
Don't do
it's
this to me.
It's not your fault.
Man. Don't do this to me. Not you,
it's
man.
It's not your fault.
You guys okay? Yeah.
Yeah, we're yeah. good.
What's right, going cool. on?
The music you heard in this podcast was written and performed by Adam Johnson and was used with his permission. You can contact Adam at adamjohnsondc@gmail.com.
I went to open the door, but then I realized it was hot because it was hot outside.